Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who play with needles. This week, our guest is Orna Willis, returning to us. Hi, Orna.
Hey, how are you guys?
Welcome.
Yes.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back. Yeah, it's always fun to talk with you. And, okay, I've got questions right out of the gate, all right? Questions right out of the gate. Before, okay. we had a topic we were talking about before we started recording. We'll get to that. In your store, I just one of these things has been bugging me. In your store, you are always offering Ultra Suede in all kinds of colors, and it looks like beautiful material. What yes. for? what do people...
Well, first of all, you can applique it, and I have some designs which I added Ultra Suede applique on top of the canvas. It has a beautiful effect. It has a nap, and it has a richness of color, and I think it works beautifully with the various threads that we work with. Secondly is for all of my cuffs or any of my jewelry, the backing I find the most beautiful and fun to put against your skin, against your body, is Ultra Suede.
Oh.
So all of my jewelry is backed with Ultra Suede. And for instance, the cuffs, if you match up the cuff with the color of Ultra Suede, and it does show, it's a beautiful combination. And plus, aren't they just gorgeous to look at?
That's why I had to know, because it looks like absolutely beautiful material, and the colors are just vibrant. And yeah, that's why I had to know what you do with this stuff. Is it like a leather, a felt? What's it like? And I know I could buy some and then I'd know, but I didn't. So,
well, it's really interesting. It looks very much like suede, like, you know, the backside of a leather suede. It's man-made. It doesn't have a weave. It has, you know, two sides. One of them is a bit like fur. It has like a texture, and you can kind of run your hand and make it sort of like with velvet, where you run your hand and it becomes darker or lighter. It has the most amazing quality of, if you cut it, it doesn't unravel. So therefore you don't need to hem it. Where you cut it is where it's going to be and where it's going to stay. And that's really fun, because it takes away those annoying things in sewing, like, you know, hems and turning inside out and all such annoying stuff. You don't need to do that here. It's very sturdy. I had the most magnificent antique sofa that I had reupholstered in a chartreuse Ultra Suede color. It was crazy fun. And one day a friend poured red wine, not poured, I want to say spilled red wine on it. And we took a towel with some water and just kind of rubbed it off, and that's it. You can wash it, you can play tennis, well, you can do anything. So I can't say enough about Ultra Suede. You've got to try it, Gary.
I guess so. Well, I mean, you always have it and you're always promoting it, and so I figured there had to be some pretty good qualities to it. And okay, all right, now I've learned.
Yeah. And the thing is that it's a very expensive material, and it's not easily available in small quantities and in many colors. Many, many places have minimums, and I'm talking about yards. So when you need, you know, just to back a pin or a pendant or anything of that sort, and it's something that you might want to do often, you want a variety of colors and you want small quantities. So that's what I try to offer in my Ultra Suede packs.
Okay. Okay. So for me to just go somewhere and buy it, I'd end up buying a full yard somewhere.
You would definitely have a hard time, number one, finding a big variety of colors, a large variety, and also, yes, being able to buy any small amount. And just to give you an idea, it usually runs between $50 and $80 a yard. So
Ooh.
It's expensive.
Oh.
Yeah.
And typically used for upholstery type things. So, you know, you're going to have upholstery type colors. It's going to be browns, taupes, black, you know, kind of boring, not very exciting colors.
Yeah, so, you know, they do have different weights. They do have the upholstery weight, but they also have lighter weights, which back in the 70s, it was, you know, it was the thing. I mean,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it was like Ultra Suede jumpers and
vests.
Yeah. I mean, if you were anybody, you got to have an Ultra Suede vest with fringe.
Of course.
Well, I missed out then.
Never too late. Never too late.
I think it is. Yeah.
No, that's Gary's all about the Ultra Suede vest.
Yeah.
With embroidery, right? Because
I don't,
embroidered garments are all the rage right now. So an embroidered Ultra Suede, I'm thinking like avocado green, right?
Yeah.
If we're going to go 70s, let's do it.
Let's do it. That's great. Yeah. I can see you now in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not happening. Not happening, ladies. Nope. Not a prayer. No. Nope.
That's a shame. I thought we had your seminar outfit all picked out.
Yeah. No. No, not happening. Especially the fringe part. Never. Okay. All right. I learned something. Thanks. I learned something. And then, okay.
Yeah.
I just have Orna questions. So you mentioned the jewelry. Now, I mean, you have all your needlework, needlepoint, and all those things, but then you have this other business, I guess, that is the jewelry. How does that emerge in your life? Is that what, because you design and make all of that, right?
I do, yes. Ray, my assistant, who is great help and is very talented and artistic, I will make it and then she will pick it up and, you know, together we'll make the various designs or quantities or whatever. So she technically is able and she helps me too. But yeah, I do it. I just sometimes feel that I need more ways to express myself and to let my hands work. I love working with metal, and I've taken many classes. I've trained. I've done a lot of metal smithing, and so it's just a love of mine. It's not something that I spend as much time doing. But, yeah, I enjoy it. And so I have to go back and forth sort of, you know, with my various loves.
Yeah, it seems to come in waves. It's like you'll be quiet on the jewelry and then all of a sudden there'll be a whole bunch of designs. It's like your head just exploded and you had to get them out.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. All of a sudden I get this crazy urge and yeah, it explodes and then I kind of move on to something else. It dies down for a while. You're right. Yeah. It keeps me, you know, this whole thing that I do and that others like me do is we have to keep self-motivating.
Yeah.
Moving. It's not easy to do. And so you find different ways to do it. And one of mine is to keep things, you know, different and variety and the same thing with my needlepoint designs. I go through phases where I will do something on, silk gauze, 40 count, And then all of a sudden I want this huge design on 18 count, and it just goes all over the place. It varies. I have to keep myself interested. So
that makes sense. It's hard to get bored if you're always changing what you're doing.
Yeah, and you stay excited that way. You know, mm-hmm. you can work on something and then it kind of becomes mundane and you switch over, and then I come back to it and it's like a rebirth. I get so excited again and I think, oh my goodness, that was good. And I excite myself that way. Yeah. It's the same thing with teaching. You know, I'll go through phases where I really don't feel open or ready to teach. I feel more like I'm, you know, I'm needing my one-on-one time. And then I go through phases where I just crave the interaction. I love the back and forth. I love to see the creativity come out of my students. So that comes in phases as well. Yeah, I guess I'm a little all over the place.
Well, that's okay. So. You're entitled. It's all right.
You know, I turned 60 this year. Oh, I say that. I turned 60 this year, and I've come to the point where I can really say, it is what it is. I am what I am. And that's really the only good thing I find about this age.
I'm 62. Oh. I don't care anymore.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's a good way to keep excited about all of the different things that way. Well, because we were just talking about having, you know, multiple projects going at once, and you put one down for a few days and then you pick it up again. And that way you never get to that point of, oh, I have to finish, you know, nobody right. wants to be at that part.
Yeah. I mean, what's the point, right? This is something we're doing to keep ourselves happy and excited and enjoyable pastime. And so, yeah. Definitely. And some people, it won't work. You know, there are people that are very regimented and just will not start something until something else is completed. And, you know, for them, doing it that way keeps them at peace and in a good place. And for me, it's being all over the place does it.
Yeah, I have to say, I just started two projects, and I have a third one. The threads are coming, and I'm determined to work all three of them essentially simultaneously. And I have two of them started already, and I have plenty of projects I've started and not finished. That's, you know, I don't have a shortage of that, but I've never done it this way, and I'm already enjoying it. The variety, because tonight I pick up the reproduction sampler, and tomorrow night I'm going to do needlepoint, and I think I'm really going to enjoy bouncing back and forth.
Now I have a question for you. Where does Come Dance With Me come in to the play?
I knew you were going to ask.
Yeah.
Well, that I need to get back to that, I'll admit, because I stopped because I was on a mission to get stockings done for my two grandsons. So everything had to stop for that. So and that was all I did. So those are done. And it's sitting there in the bag. And yes, you're right. I need to get back to that because I was enjoying that. And then I stopped. And then, you know, and then the class ended and it kind of lost its momentum there. And all right. You gilded me into it.
Yeah, I'm always here to encourage you to get right back to it.
Yep. No, that was a fun class. I learned a lot in the short little run we had there with that design. For those who don't know, it was Orna did a design class, and we stitched along as she designed on the fly, and it was interesting to see your mind work, and there were a couple of times I didn't know how you were going to make it all come together, but you did. Everything worked out fine. You've made the piece available now. Anyone can buy the. What are we calling it now?
Come Dance With Me.
Yes. So yeah, anybody can buy it.
We had a vote.
What's that?
We had a vote. Remember,
yes.
The people came up with names, and then it seemed like that was the one that people liked, and so yeah, it's really so much fun when I get to work with people, you know, like naming a design. It was great. It was great to hear what everybody had to say and their suggestions. It was a lot of fun. There are great people in the class, and they were a lot of them willing to share and ask questions. And did you enjoy the class, Gary?
Yeah, I did. I did. Even though I got behind, I enjoyed following, like I said, just following and watching how your mind worked and how you pieced it together. And there were the points where I thought, Orna, this is not going to happen. And then you would drop in the one or two elements that just tied it all in. And I just found that just riveting to watch that happen. So I enjoyed it a lot. And if life hadn't gotten in the way, I would have that piece done, because it really turned out beautifully. I mean, there's some good challenges in there, and lots of nice colors, and no lack of different threads. That's for sure. That's fun.
I was really happy, by the way, and this doesn't always happen, but I was really happy that at some point I got stumped. I just didn't know how to solve something. And I had really spent a lot of time and tons of variation to the point where my canvas was just falling apart, you know, from stitching and pulling out and stitching and pulling out. And I wasn't going to compromise. So sometimes, you know, I guess when nobody's watching, you can say, okay, I'm just going to let this happen. You know, this is what it's going to be. But I really wanted to give you guys the best that I could do. And it was great, because there was a lot of, you know, reaction to the various options. And what was really cool was people, as the class went on, people got more and more confident in participating and giving their opinion. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh yeah. That was a standout part of it, because yeah, everybody was just shy at the beginning. And then, yeah, the people, you would start to see that. And I thought that was a neat dynamic that was happening in the group. Yes.
I think so. It was neat because of that. And it was neat because of people, you know, starting to feel that they could see too, that, you know, they had a reaction. And because we would stop like mid-sentence almost, you know, the design is here, what do I do next? Then it sort of just trying to solve little parts. And I think people saw that they had the ability to see options and to react to them. And I think that was part of what was really fun for me to see this happen, and hopefully for the students too.
Yeah. Did you find that parts of the design just flowed out of you, and other parts you just had to keep trying until you hit the right combination? Or how did that work in your head?
Absolutely. And that's the way it always works. There are very few designs that from start to finish, it's, you know, I take my dog out to walk sometimes, and sometimes I walk the dog and sometimes the dog walks me. And, you know, she'll be running down the street and I'm kind of like trying to keep up. So there are designs that do that, that they take me. Not many of them. Most of the designs I have to look, you know, and try to determine which way to go. And sometimes it's very easy and sometimes it's not. And I think this particular class, this particular design, I was lucky that I had a bit of everything, you know, from flowing no problem at all to I'm going to pull my hair out. It was like the variety.
But that sounds like that's what it's really like, though. It sounds like it's a realistic representation of what design is like.
Absolutely. That's right. There was nothing in this class that was manipulated. It was all a true, honest peek into how I design. That's not, you know, there's no formula. This is me. And you got to see it. Like, you know, we were sitting in two comfy chairs side by side, and I was sharing everything with all of you, things that were difficult and things that weren't, and trying to explain how my idea came about and why I thought that this worked but this didn't. You know, I tried to explain as best I could. And I think that what was nice is that people picked up on the intuitiveness of why, you know, on understanding what is behind this intuition, and that there is reasoning. And I think they picked up on it really beautifully. It was definitely a give and take, the class. It wasn't just me, you know, coming to you with the final product.
Yeah, I wondered from the beginning how that would go and if it would go the way you intended, and it seemed to, it made a turn, and then it seemed to be more what I sensed that you had in your mind when you started the thing, was that exchange and sharing, and I imagined at many points it was hard for you to describe what was in your head, that you know, at times it was, I just do this, and how am I going to actually put this in words?
Yeah, and I don't always know. I have to sit down and recreate the moment and try to understand what was behind it. And there's always something behind it. You just have to really stop and relive it and do it slow motion, so you kind of come to the conclusion of, okay, this is why, this is what made me feel this way, and this is what made me feel that way. And, you know, the beginning of any class that I teach, I like to teach classes that are a little different than just how to stitch one particular piece. And it's always... at the beginning, a lot of people are not sure what they signed up for. And, you know, you have to get into the rhythm. You have to slowly sort of open up this book that they're going to be reading with me. And the first few pages are hard. You know, I'm not sure if they're understanding. They're not sure what I want. Where are we going? And sort of by chapter 2 or 3, we're starting to get into the groove. And then, you know, we're just flowing, and it's a great feeling. But that was very typical of classes that I teach. Uh-huh. And it's you have to have a lot of faith that every time, you know, it's going to work. It's going to be, you know, that it works out, you know it. But it's always a little scary. And yet, you know, I dive into these situations, just like, I mean, this next class that I'm going to be teaching is another whole new, different kind of, what do I want to say, a road. I mean, this is going to be something that I don't think anybody traveled on this kind of a road, and I kind of know it's going to work, but a part of me says, gosh, I hope it's going to work.
Yeah, you're really changing and upping the game for this kind of a design class with this next one. This is, I mean, you people are actually going to do their own designs, right?
Correct, correct. In the previous class, people watched me design. This class, the design is yours. You will be coming up with the design. And the question is, how does that happen? And I've broken it down into steps that I'll, you know, be guiding along the way, but are very doable. And I have a feeling that at the end of this class, there will be, you know, there will be a group of people who will say, you know, I can do this on my own. That doesn't mean you have to, but they will learn how to design geometrics, period. It'll be quite a journey.
Yeah.
That sounds exciting and terrifying, but exciting. Like that sounds very interesting. And interesting from the perspective of an instructor, because you're teaching a theory, but then you can't, especially if it's a distance class, you can't guide people specifically, right? Everybody's gotta kind of do it on their own. So you're just kind of giving them you're teaching them to fish, and then they're going to come up with their own fish.
Well, yes and no, because what's going to happen is that they will be coming up with a design that we will come to sort of together. I mean, they're doing it with the class as we move along, and there will be a lot of one-on-one, and at the end of the class, they will have a design that I will chart for them.
Ah, okay.
On my software, and it will be theirs. So the fishing happens together as well. Now, from there, you know, I've taught them how to fish. So, yes, they will go about when they choose and do it on their own. But it's how to come about these geometric designs, I think it'll be super, super interesting and fun, and not scary. That I can promise, not scary.
Well, it's certainly something different in terms of a class. There's no doubt. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody try anything like this. I mean, you're literally part of the kit is a sketch pad. Yeah, you know, for people who are wondering how basic or you know, how down to the beginning does it get? Yeah, it looks like you're going to have them literally drawing on a sketch pad to figure things out.
They're going to be actually drawing with watercolor on watercolor paper, and with these magnificent watercolor brush markers that are so fabulous and really make whatever it is that you're drawing look so professional. It's just, it's almost magical. But I'll tell you where this comes from. I keep going back, ages back, but remember when, I don't know if you remember, when there were only landlines.
Yes.
And you could not move away from the phone because there was a cord, and the cord was only so long.
And, yes.
And then remember there were these even furniture. They had these benches where there was a bench, and then there was a little shelf, and that was for when you answered your phone so you could talk. Sit down, be comfortable next to your phone, right? And so I remember that I would answer the phone and chat or whatever, but my hand was always doodling. Like I always had something that I was drawing on with a pen or a pencil or whatever was sitting there. And, you know, depending on the length of the conversation, I could fill up pages. And what I would do is like draw shapes and then draw, like fill an area, sort of like a puzzle. So, you know, I drew a triangle and then I filled the empty space with a different shape. And then, you know, there was room for a little circle. And this doodling became something that years later, when I started designing geometrics, that's where I took my starting points. I would remember how I looked at an empty piece of paper, started putting down shapes, and made the shapes fit together. And, you know, sometimes become a composition. This is sort of the premise that I'm taking for the class. So we will be drawing a rectangle. So we have a very specific shape. And with these watercolors, we're going to start filling the rectangle, the triangle, with different shapes and make it all come together, and play around quite a bit with that, with the watercolor. And then from there, we're going to translate these shapes into stitches. So if, for instance, you drew a circle, then what stitch would work as this circle? So, you know, the obvious is a Jessica, right?
Right.
So you did the Jessica, and then next to the Jessica, you have these four rectangles. So what do you do with them? Could they be road stitches? Could they be cushion stitches? Should they just be basket weave? And you start working on each shape, interpreting it to stitches, and then you have this magnificent 45 different fibers to start playing around with the stitches that you come up with. And, you know, eventually you're going to find a design that is the one you were looking for, and I will chart it for you. And we're going to do this in 6 months, and it's going to be fantastic.
That really sounds phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds like fun. And yeah, the array of threads and colors that you've selected for this thing, I mean, everybody's going to have about every combination they could come up with, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the array, you don't need to use all of the colors and all of the different threads, but you certainly have, you know, a big variety to make all sorts of combinations, and you will not lack for different interpretations of stitches. It's a really fun array of almost any type of thread you can think of, and colors. And actually, there are also four different options of colors to choose from.
So you can pick different colorways?
Yeah, yeah. So you have four different options of 45 threads in each one. Yeah, so you
45 threads. Oh, and that box shows up.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Your house, your house or apartment, you just must be packed with threads somewhere, huh?
Well, right now, we are in a rental townhouse because we're building a house, and there's a finished basement, and it is lined with boxes of fibers.
That's pretty much the best thing ever.
It is. It is fibers and beads and ultra suede and all around me. It's very, very yummy.
Yummy. Okay.
Yeah, you
Okay.
need to come back sometime.
Yeah, I was just in New York here earlier in the week, and but no time. But yeah, I would love to see that. That's got to be a feast for the eyes. 'Cause your Etsy store, you handle everything right out of your house, right?
Yep, it's all here. Yeah, and over the years, because I've been doing this for quite a while, over the years, we've kept changing organizational solutions to how to do things, and we've been gotten better and better at it, and pretty much have a place for everything, have all our packaging materials, and yeah, it's a business. It's a definitely a little business, cottage industry. Yep.
And you have who? You have one person that helps you?
Yes, I have a wonderful assistant, Ray, who takes care of getting all the orders out, of ordering what we need in order to put the kits together. She takes care of all sorts of things. Really great. And also she's very artistic. She's very talented. So she can always give some input. She's learned how to stitch. She's now learning how to chart. So yeah, she's great. And she comes in every day in the morning till sometime midday. And in fact, today she came in the evening because somebody got hold of my credit card, and we needed to get a new card, and she came in to start inputting all the new credit card information everywhere.
Oh,
Huh. So
jeez.
yeah, she does a lot of stuff. She's great. And what's really neat is I've known her for many years because she was Nina, my daughter. She was her babysitter when Nina was 4 years.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's like family.
Yep, that's great. That's great. Yeah, there's no way I can't imagine you could do it without help because at some point you wouldn't be able to stitch or design either one.
As it is, there's not enough time to stitch what's going through my mind. So we do the best we can.
The Puerto Rico effort that you had, and I now I've forgotten how we say that, COQUI.
Cookie.
Cokie. How did that go? Did is that still, obviously, you can still buy the designs, but I thought that was a great idea for raising some money for to help in Puerto Rico.
It was so gratifying. We raised $1,000, and one morning I thought of the idea that I would like to do something that proceeds from the whatever it is go towards this relief effort. And to think that it's not a ton of money, but it's $1,000 that together with my fellow stitchers we put together and sent off to help them, and I felt really good about it. When I thought of the idea, and that was great, but then I had to think of what the design is going to be. And I looked at the flag, which was way too detailed for to interpret it as a needlepoint piece, and started reading about the country, and then came across this story of a frog, a native Puerto Rican frog called coqui. And the name comes from the sound that the frog makes. So in the evenings, all over Puerto Rico, you hear these frogs talking to each other, and male and female. And one of them says co, and the other says ki. And that's what you hear. And if you ever Google it, Google to hear the coqui frogs, it's exactly that. And and you hear them, tons of them, all night long, talking to each other, coqui, coqui, coqui. It's so marvelous. And so I happened to find interpretation of this frog that was done by native Indians that lived in Puerto Rico, I think up until the 1400s, and they had different shapes of things, and one of the things was the frog, and it was a delightful little shape, very simple, and so I thought, okay, that's what I'll do. And that's how the frog came about. And that's how we raise money.
Yeah, it's neat. Yep. I have not even gotten a piece of canvas to stitch mine, but I definitely bought one right away. Wanted to help out with that. That was a great idea. Yep. And,
Thank you for doing that.
And still ongoing, yeah. Right? I mean, people can still buy and money still goes, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The design is $20, and $10 of that goes into the relief fund. Yep.
Yeah, and it's neat because I remember commenting to Christine on a show that when I first saw it, I thought, "Oh, Arna, you could have done a better frog than that." But then, when you read the story and it's a drawing from Native Indians. Then for me, it took on a whole different dimension, a really neat depth to the story then.
Yeah, it's it is a beautiful story, and definitely something that needed to be done. I was listening to the situation there just today, and they're still in really bad shape. So if anybody is looking for a nice design, then they're welcome to try the coqui frog and at the same time help Puerto Rico, even if just a little bit.
Yep, and still a lot of help needed there. That's a mess. And
yeah, definitely.
We'll pass on.
A mess.
We'll pass on the politics of it, but yeah, that's just disgusting is what it is. Yep. So we were talking Wednesday, Orna. All right, got to get your opinion. Christine and I were talking Wednesday. We got off on this tangent about the little things in stitching. And one of the things that came up was the twist of the thread and how you stitch with it and whether it matters in terms of how the thread looks and behaves. And we just got off on it ended up being almost a half hour discussion about but all the little things that, and whether they really matter and to whom they matter. You know, do the majority of people just not care? Because I was talking about little things like when you have two different stitches come together and making sure that you don't have threads crossing that hole, so you can hold it up to the light and see clear definition between the two stitches. Light will come through. And just little tiny things like that they bug me, and they're the kinds of things I strive for. And so I guess the question for you is, how much of that do you worry about? How much of that do you pay attention to when you're stitching?
It depends what you're talking about. So when you talk about holding up and seeing the light come through the canvas, I would say that I find that really important, but not because of holding the, you know, the canvas up and whether or not I stitched it correctly, but more from the perspective of, is the line on the canvas, on the right side of the canvas, is the line of the stitch defined the way I would want it to be? Mm-hmm. So if I stitch it in such a way where there's a very distinct, deep, nice groove, and that's what I wanted, then I will figure out what is the right way to stitch it in order for that to happen. But if I don't think that that matters to the design, and if it's just for the sake of, you know, making sure that I stitch it with all the rules in place, then just for that, then I'm not interested, and I don't think I would even be able to remember what the rules are. You were talking about the twist of threads, and I can say what is it, a Z twist, right?
That's Isn't one there of a them. Z twist? Yeah, that's one of them. Yes, And I don't know, is it S?
An S twist, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. So I can say it and sound like I know what I'm saying.
That's half the battle right there. Yay.
I could do that, but in all honesty, this is what I'm, and I think this comes from being self-taught, that I learned what matters, not from the rules, but from experience. And then once I realized that, then I repeated the technique, whatever it was, that made that happen. So, you know, there's a thread that comes to mind, Trebizond, Axis Commodities Trebizond, which is a beautiful pearl silk. And I'm not sure if it has a Z or an S, I'm not sure. But I do know that there comes a time as I'm stitching with it where it slowly untwists and becomes sort of flat. It's no longer round. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when that happens, the effect on the canvas, the stitch, begins to look different. So that would bother me, and I would probably end the thread, even if there might be, you know, still a long length, and start a new one. So again, I guess what I'm saying is I only care about it in as much as it matters to the design and to the effect that I want to achieve. Otherwise, I would never turn a canvas around. It doesn't interest me. So, you know, you're always safe with me. I'm not going to turn it around.
And it's funny because that's one of those things that I think people have very strong opinions about. Some people have said quite strongly that the back of your canvas matters, and it matters because it shows your attention to detail. And if you don't pay attention to the back of the canvas, and you know, then the front won't look as nice. And then other people will say, you're going to put it in a frame or a pillow and nobody's ever going to see it. So who cares? Stitch the front and make the front look beautiful. And people feel very strongly about that. And it's funny that is one of the things that I think people have strong opinions about. And what I find as I'm stitching is what I'm finding I'm doing is thinking about how the piece is going to be used. So I have a piece that I'm doing that's a crewel piece that I'm going to make a pillow out of. So there are knots all over the back of that. And I don't care because it's going in a pillow and you'll never see the knots. You'll never feel the knots. They're going to be invisible. And I know that it's going to be sturdy. So for me, it's more important that it's sturdy than pretty. Right. And then there's other pieces that I know will be framed. So I want them to be smooth. So, they're not going to be bounced around or tossed or anything. So for those, there's no knots, but I'm trying to make it smooth and nice on the back. So I'm trying to think more functionally than rules, like you said.
Yeah. I think that the people that find this very important have good reason for that, in that they look at this more as technicians.
Yes.
So how technically do you make something happen? Because my background is art, I always think that, you know, how much time do I or do people looking at my art spend thinking how technically I use the brush, you know, whether I mixed the paints correctly, or I don't know, you know, what my canvas is made of. So it's not that that's not right to look at that, maybe, but that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to give you a finished piece that is my take on something.
Right, an experience.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And whether I got to this experience one way or another, I always think in terms of art, you know, how many times has anyone tried to understand whether or not I used the tools, the brush or whatever, correctly? I don't think many times. I think usually they look at the finished piece and, you know, respond to it. That's my take on it. There's certainly things that need to be done to make the stitched piece look its best on the front. But, you know, just to the extent that has a significance in the finished piece, I think. I think that it's interesting. There's a lot of resurgence of embroidery among younger women, you know, in their teens, 20s, 30s. There's a lot of that happening, really fun, wacky stuff. And somehow that discussion does not come up with embroidery. You know,
that's
whether...
interesting.
Yeah, there's more freedom somehow. It doesn't, and I feel like it restricts people that want to try it out. It becomes something that if you're not extremely knowledgeable, then, you know, you shouldn't even try. And that's a shame. We need to have this a much more welcoming type of art. And, you know, let people learn what's important to them over time, but allow them to do what they do, however they do it. And I think that's totally legitimate and worthy of encouragement.
Yeah, I think that's the point, is doing, letting people do what pleases them. Because for many people, it's the art, it's the product, it's creating something that the finished product is the pleasing thing. And for other people, it's the practice of it that's pleasing. So it's the, can you sit and stitch and create something where you can look at it and say, I did every part of that perfectly, and I'm proud of what I did because it's better than what I did yesterday. And so there's different elements of it that are providing different benefits to people at different times, right? So I can see how, for some people, that the technique of it and perfecting the technique in the act of doing it is providing benefit, right? That's where the therapy comes in. Mm-hmm. And for people, I'm not an artist, and I don't know if I'm a technician either, but for me, it becomes a little bit of each of those things. It's a little bit of producing something that I would be proud and feel happy to look at, but it's also a little bit of the act of doing the thing and doing it better than I did it the day before, and feeling a little bit of pride in that, right? And there's a little bit of soothingness in not just sort of slap dashing something together, but in perfecting the art and doing something repetitive. I think there's benefit to that as well.
I think that's beautifully said. I couldn't say it better. I think that really encompasses both ways of, you know, looking at it. The thing that is important is to respect either way and to welcome yes. either way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
I agree.
That's what's important. When I started designing, I was not easily accepted because I was not trained, you know, and from start to finish, because I did not have any type of certification. It was sort of an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. I think today things are much more open, you know, a little more laid back, a little more welcoming. And we have to do that because we have to pass this on to a younger generation and bring more and more people in.
Yeah. Quickest way to turn off the young people is have all kinds of rigid walls that are 50 foot high and rule for everything, including breathing. Yeah. They'll just walk away. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. I would walk away. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Understandable.
Well, see, and for me, yeah. You know, are you a technician or an artist? Well, I'm certainly not an artist, but I guess I'm very much a technician. But that's one thing I watch. I have a little voice in the back of my head that cautions me about getting so bogged down in the technical aspects that it sucks the fun out of it. You know, I have to remember that I want every stitch to be just so and so on and so forth, but also it has to be enjoyable. When I get done, I have to have enjoyed it and look forward to the next opportunity. And so I'm always cautioning myself to not go overboard with my quest for perfection. But
yeah.
When you did post a photograph of your work, I definitely could see the precision. And it's beautiful to look at, you know, and when it's done beautifully, it brings out the best in a design. So it's not that there isn't a value to that. And this is what makes you feel good. It's just that it's something that has to, just like we say, has to be important to you, has to make you feel good, and has to allow you to do it, and has to allow somebody like me that wants to do it more free form, be just as welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could probably talk about this all day, but we're out of time. So there we have it. So your class, your new class, when's the deadline?
The deadline is on Monday, tomorrow.
Yes.
And if anyone has any questions or wants to chat with me, I would be more than happy to do that. So if, you know, you just want to contact me on Monday, but you're still not sure, that's fine. That's a nice thing about being a small business. I can be flexible.
Yep.
And we start next year. We start in January. So no worries about the holidays.
slaving over the holidays. I got to get this done for Orna. Yeah.
It really, just the idea of the class, though, it's so exciting, and, you know, to be able to have somebody sort of, you know, hold your hand a little bit while you, you know, learn to be a designer. That to me is so exciting. It's like, for all the people that think, like you're saying, Gary, you know, well, I'm not an artist, to have somebody walk you through it and at the end say, oh, maybe I'm a little bit of an artist, you know.
Yes.
What a nice thing to be able to do.
That's exactly right. By the way, Gary, if you guys want, I sent you some JPEGs that would maybe be interesting to see of the kit and of the process of the designing. If you'd like to put it up on your Facebook, people can get a chance to see it.
Definitely.
Yep, I got them. They'll be on the page for this podcast so people can see them. You bet. And now if I'm looking for Ultra Suede, I know now where to get it. Okay. I'm locked in.
In just the right quantity.
That's right. All right, Orna. Thanks. A treat as always. Thanks for taking time, and I hope your class fills up, and Christine and I will be back on Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.